Harvester CEO Karen Herron is stepping down from Harvesters after a 14-year stint at the Kansas City Food Bank. A lot has changed over the years, including the number of people served each week by Harvesters. That number now totals 66,000. And the rise of perishable food that has such a short shelf life that's become so common. Karen Herron will be succeeded by Valerie Nicholson Watson on July 1st. Valerie Nicholson Watson is now the president and CEO of the Niles Home for Children in Kansas City. Karen Herron joins us now, and welcome, and by all means, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
Why is this the right time to say goodbye, Karen?
Gosh, you know, that was sort of a hard decision when to leave Harvesters.
But
I wanted to leave when I still had the energy and the enthusiasm and the commitment to continue this job, and it's challenging every day. So I had to look ahead. The board had wanted me to give a year's notice of when I would be stepping down. And so I had to look ahead and kind of think about what was the right time.
Mm-hmm.
This seemed like the right time. I still have the enthusiasm and energy for the job.
It's challenging every day. Why?
Well, it's challenging every day because hunger is such an issue in our community. And Harvester's mission is to feed hungry people today and to end hunger tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, you know, over the 14 years I've been in this job, we've seen hunger continue to grow as an issue. And so the challenge is, how do we meet that need? How do we as a community meet the need to feed those who are hungry in our midst?
How much of the need are we meeting?
Well, it's difficult to say in a way, because hunger happens, you know, on a regular basis. And the definition that we use is food insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Food insecurity basically means that a family, an individual might have food today, but doesn't know where food's going to come from tomorrow, this weekend, or there's not enough food for everyone in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways we assess how much of the need are we meeting is we map the meal gap, it's called. And there's actually information on Harvester's website by county that shows how many meals are available and how many are missing. And there's still quite a large gap of need to provide food for families.
I was going to say, if you're serving 66,000 meals a week, people served each
week,
served each week, how many might the number be if you were serving anybody who was in a food insecurity situation?
If everybody had, you know, that's what I'm not sure exactly what that number would be.
Would it double? Would it triple? Just
It would probably be triple or quadruple. And the reason I say that is we know that food insecure families provide about half of the food they need themselves. Then the next source of food for those families is through the government programs such as SNAP and WIC and the other government feeding programs. And then food banks and the agencies that we provide food to only provide 3 or 4% of the food that's needed. So
that's interesting.
You know, if you then there's still this gap when you take all of those together. So that's why I say it would probably be 4 or 5 times the amount of food that we're distributing now to meet the total need. And it, you know, it happens every week. So it's not like you can say, well, we've fixed that problem and we've solved the problem.
We're visiting with Karen Herron, the retiring CEO of Harvesters. Karen, you once said that you've never understood how we can live in the wealthiest country in the world, and yet we still have so many people who don't have enough food. I'm wondering, you know, I don't get that either. As you prepare to leave this job after all these years dealing with the food scarcity issue, do you understand that question any better today than you once did?
You know, I wish I could say, geez, I've got it figured out, Steve. I don't really understand it any better, I guess. And the reason I say that is because we have lots of food. The issue is not a scarcity of food. There is a lot of food. We're just today there was a little blurb about the government is looking at ways to reduce the amount of food we throw away. We're filling up landfills with food. And at the same time, there are lots of people, 1 in 5 kids, 1 in 5 kids is facing food insecurity. So you know, I in my mind can't rationalize that. And I can't rationalize how by not feeding kids, it's more costly to not feed kids than it is to feed kids. So, you know, it would make a whole lot of sense if we could be sure that people had food and had food consistently. It's better for their health. It's better for their academic productivity, better for our economy. There's so many benefits. And we would offset some of those long-term costs of feeding people today. And I think part of our issue at Harvesters has always been, how do we educate the community? Because most of us, most just general population, we don't like see somebody, we go, oh, that's a hungry person. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't it's not real visible sometimes. So one of our jobs is to help educate, how many people are there in the community who are going hungry, and what's happening? How can this be?
I was going to say, on some levels, it strikes me as such a tricky problem because so many of us can no longer really appreciate or even relate to, I imagine, what it would be like to be without food or to be worrying about where food might come tomorrow. So I can only imagine that the hill you've got to climb to educate people, to use your words, has got to be pretty steep.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Most of us go to the grocery store and buy whatever we want or need. But it's surprising that 1 in 8 in our community faces food insecurity.
1 in 8?
1 in 8. So there's
That's a staggering number, Karen.
A lot of people. A lot of people. It is 1 in 8. I mean, if you just look around a room and there's 8 people in the room, one person is probably dealing with food insecurity at home. So it is a staggering number. And, you know, that's our challenge, is how do we help people to know there are that many people who face food insecurity? And many times they also struggle with the pride of not wanting to ask, you know, how, as a parent, if you can't feed your kids, you know, that's a pretty tough thing to face and confront. And, you know, how do you go to a pantry and ask for food assistance?
Yeah. How do you go about educating the community to sort of get the word out? Again, 1 in 8, again, just staggering number. How do you get the word out? How do you spread the word?
We try to do that almost every day.
Yeah, sure.
It's how do we help educate? A couple of things that we do. One, we do have the Map the Meal Gap information on our website. And the other thing that we're doing, and we're actually right in the process of this now, it's called Hunger in America. And it's a comprehensive study that we do through Feeding America, our national organization. Food banks all across the country are doing interviews with the clients who receive the food that we distribute. And through that, we compile that information. It tells us a lot about circumstances, about how the families do meet their needs, what issues some of them are facing. Sometimes there's medical bills that have, sometimes it doesn't take a whole lot to put a family to need food assistance. One of those can be medical bills, the car breaks down, loss of a job.
Sure.
It's easy. I mean, we all can envision that. So the Hunger in America study, and we won't be releasing it for some time. It'll be several months before we're able to release the information. But it does give us lots of good information. And then we try to share that with the community to help them know that 1 in 8 is facing food insecurity.
Is 1 in 8, is that number high? Is it typical? Is it low for compared to other major cities across the country?
I think it's probably pretty typical. There's some variations that we see in the Midwest. One, we see more working families who need food assistance in the Midwest than you do on the coast, for example. So that's one variance that we see.
And by working families, you mean folks who are putting in full-time or close to full-time hours and still can't make ends meet.
Absolutely.
That concept is also lost on a lot of people, I think.
It is lost on a lot of people. It's like, well, why don't they get a job?
Yeah.
Well,
they got a job.
They're working. And we know that about 40% of the families have at least one person working, one job in that family. Sometimes there's two jobs.
40% of the people who come to Harvesters?
40% of the people who receive the food we distribute.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
40% are in households with someone working.
Hmm. How does someone who's hungry connect with Harvesters? How do they engage with the program and begin to receive the assistance you can provide?
We provide food to about 620 nonprofit organizations. So those are pantries, shelters, kitchens that provide hot meals throughout the 26-county area, both sides of the state line. They can go to our website, and there's a locator to find a pantry or a provider that would be close to them. They can also go through the United Way and try to find something that's close to them. So there are pantries and there are organizations throughout the entire metropolitan area and throughout those counties.
To what extent do you provide food directly to the people who need it? Or is it mostly two different organizations?
Yes. Harvesters is really a centralized collection and distribution system. So we provide the food to the agencies who then provide the food to those who need it.
Yeah. When I've been over there volunteering, I worked on one Saturday backpacks for kids.
Yes.
So those backpacks are going directly to the children themselves, right?
Yes, they are. We distribute them through schools.
I was really good at filling those backpacks, by the way.
I bet you
need more people like me over there. Yeah.
People love to come and help pack the backpacks. It's such a great experience. And you know that food is going to a child that otherwise would go home from school on Friday and probably not have food till they come back to
school
on Monday.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're currently, this is a shocking number, we're currently doing 18,000 a week of backpacks that we distribute throughout those 26 counties. And so those are kids that we know that have been identified through the school that we know go home and don't have food over the weekends.
And so the backpack is all tailored just to get them through that weekend then?
It is, yes. It's all food that can be opened easily, doesn't require heating. There's milk, as you saw when you were packing those backpacks. There's shelf-stable milk, so it doesn't have to be refrigerated. So it's a good little nutrition pack that the kids take home on Friday. And it provides food that they would have food over the weekend.
How in the world do you manage to get 18,000 backpacks prepared each week? Because, again, I remember from my experience, we were churning through a lot, but I don't think we did 18,000.
Well, we have the packing down to a science, as you saw.
Yes, you do.
it's all volunteers, and we have assembly lines set up, so we pack those. And it really is, the other thing that makes it possible is the community support to buy that food that we put into those backpacks. So without the support of individuals, our corporate partners, we wouldn't be able to secure that. And I think it's really people don't want kids going hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that kind of thing. They come down, they volunteer their time, they donate the funds to help fill those backpacks.
And people love to do that, too. I mean,
it's
such a great way to connect with your organization, isn't it? You guys have it all sort of down to a science, as you said, and you walk in and kabing, kaboom, pretty soon you're on the assembly line and you're doing real stuff.
Yes. One of the things that Harvesters is known for is doing a good job of engaging volunteers, supporting volunteers, having them want to come back and have another experience. So we also have corporate groups, families, synagogues, churches, all kinds of groups come to Harvesters and help us. And we have about 5,000 volunteers a month that come and help us.
Wow, that's just amazing.
So it's a great opportunity.
Karen Heron's our guest. She's the retiring CEO of Harvesters. If you want to join our conversation with a question about Harvesters or the hungry in the Kansas City area, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is uptodate@kcur.org, or you can also tweet us @kcuruptodate. Well, Karen, walk us through the process here of what happens to a food donation once Harvesters receives it. How is it processed? Where is it stored? How does it get donated? Sort of, and who's giving the food to begin with?
Wow.
Just take one of those. I'll remind you of the others as we go along.
Well, the food comes from lots of sources.
Yes, it does.
Comes from the food industry is probably our largest source of food. So that comes from anywhere throughout the food chain, from producers, growers, brokers, wholesalers, distributors, retailers, grocers, you name it, anywhere throughout the chain.
And a grocer would want to donate it to Harvesters. Why? Why would a grocer do that?
Well, the grocery business has been very supportive of Harvesters, and because it helps to provide food out into the community, you know, many of the people we provide food to are also customers of those grocery stores. It's just they can't always purchase enough themselves at the grocery store.
But grocery store margins are so small, do they just sit back and say, well, here, take a crate of orange juice here. We don't need it. I mean, do they budget that into their annual budgets that we're going to give away so much food? Or how does that work?
Well, you know, they don't want to have any more that they can't sell than possible. So they do a very good job, actually, of managing dates and all of those kinds of things. But they also know just the reality is there's going to be food that they bring in that they're not going to be able to sell.
Okay.
So it's better to have that food be used and be donated to Harvesters, and then as opposed to dumping it in a landfill. I mean, what good does that do anyone?
They call you all up and you send a truck out to pick it up then?
We have regular routes that we send trucks out to pick up from the grocery stores. So we pick up from the grocery stores, we bring it back into Harvesters, and then what we do is we process it. So depending on what it is, and, you know, we also get food from food drives in the community. So we have lots of donations coming into Harvesters. Then we process them through our volunteer outreach center, similar to what you were doing with packing the backpacks. But other groups of volunteers will help us sort the food into categories. We box it up. Sometimes if it's fresh produce, we will go through and sort through that food and take out the food that maybe is not edible or is beyond its useful life and repackage the food that is still good. And then we make it available to those 620 agencies. So that's kind of the path that goes through Harvesters.
Is the food supply that's coming into Harvesters from grocery stores and everywhere else, is it fairly consistent or does it sort of fluctuate? And I'm wondering how you deal with that if it fluctuates.
Well, it changes over time, just like the food in the grocery stores has changed over time. When Harvesters first started, we only handled shelf-stable, canned food, basically.
Yeah.
But then, as we've all noticed in our grocery stores, there's way more prepared, perishable. The aisles of fresh produce have gotten bigger. The canned food aisles have gotten smaller. So Harvesters has adapted to that. And currently, we're doing more produce than ever. We're currently doing about 16, 17 million pounds of produce a year. So that's meant we've had to change everything because you can't handle apples and carrots and onions the same way that you handle a can of shelf-stable food. So we have to
get
bring
it out
it
the
in.
Door.
You have to move it out very quickly. Yes.
Yeah. And how do you – you must have an incredible monitoring system to know, I imagine, what, at any one moment, how much food you have on the shelves back there?
We do, actually. Everything is entered into a computer. It's all – we actually have a voice pick system where we pull the orders for the agencies. So it's a very sophisticated distribution center, actually, at Harvesters. And because of food safety issues, you know, we have to be on top of all that. We're inspected. Our distribution center is inspected by AIB. So we meet the same.
AIB is?
American Institute of Baking originally, but they set standards for food safety and warehouse management and distribution inventory control. So we meet the same standards that any food distribution center. Actually, we meet the highest of those standards.
How liable are you? How liable is Harvesters if some of this food isn't good and it gets distributed?
There is a Good Samaritan law that says that if you're distributing the food in good faith, that, you know, you're somewhat held harmless. But we believe that we really have a commitment to provide healthy, safe food. So we do everything in our power to ensure that the food is handled properly, temperature controlled, inventory managed appropriately. So we've never had an incident. We would hope that we never do have an incident of the food not being healthy and safe.
Karen Heron's our guest. She's the retiring CEO of Harvesters. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. And our email address is up to date at kcur.org. Paula writes to us here, and she writes, so many prepared foods, whether in grocery stores, delis, Costco, or restaurants, have to be discarded. How can Harvesters use this food?
We can use prepared food. We can't use food that has been served. So if it's been on a buffet line, and you can see some of the issues there, if it's been put out on a salad bar or plated and served, we can't take any of that food. But all
That's
the
too
food,
bad.
It is, I know.
It's a lot of food,
but it's,
right?
You get into those safety issues. Has it been temperature controlled, and has it been exposed? Have people put their hands in, you know?
Yeah.
So for those reasons, we can't. But we do rescue prepared food, and we do make that available to some of the hot meal programs. So there is a way to rescue that food.
I'm wondering, how did you get involved with Harvesters to begin with?
It was actually 27 years ago. I have a bachelor's degree in home economics, so I have some food and nutrition background. I love to cook. And I guess one of the first things my husband and I ever supported with donations was around the issue of hunger relief. In 1986, I knew a woman who was elected to the board chair of Harvesters. And I said to her, if there's anything I can do to help, I would like to help.
So famous last words.
Yeah, I know. Famous last words. So she asked me if I would serve on the board of directors, and I was on the board for 11 years. And it really was just the mission is so compelling. I mean, help feed people. And it just seemed like that's, you know, it was a passion that I had that we should do something about that.
But how do you go from being a member of the board or even someone who's just interested in the subject to a member of the board to running the organization? That's kind of a leap, isn't it?
It is a bit of a leap. I've always worked in nonprofit organizations and in management positions in nonprofit organizations, both locally and nationally. So when the opportunity came, my predecessor retired. So when the opportunity came along, I was like, this is perfect. And I could even get paid to do this job. So I applied and was accepted. And
off you went.
And off we went. Yeah. So that was 14 years ago.
What was the biggest challenge you faced 14 years ago? What were some of the things first on your plate of things you had to get done?
You know, it really was when I first came into this job. Harvesters had outgrown our warehouse at that point in time. We were in the
2431 Prospect, right?
Yes. Well, it was just after that. We were on North Topping, 1811 North Topping. I was on the board when we were on Prospect. And we had outgrown that space. I knew that we had to really step up our fundraising efforts, that we needed a new facility, and it was going to take a lot of work to get that done. And so within the first year, we launched an $11.5 million campaign that led to where we are now, the wonderful facility that we have.
And that
now
is a wonderful facility, by the way.
It really is. It's been a great, great facility. We've been there 9 years. So that was one of the first things I saw. And also just this issue about educating people about hunger. Mm-hmm. People didn't know, and they still don't know. I mean, I think we've done a great job and increased the awareness, but there's still a lot to do to help people understand hunger in our community.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Karen Heron is our guest. She's leaving Harvesters after, 13 years?
14 years in this job.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Karen from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning. Hi, Karen. She's wondering, how will cuts to food stamps affect the community?
Gosh, this is a really major concern of ours. As I was mentioning earlier, the federal feeding programs, food stamps and WIC and the other programs, are the first line of defense to help feed those who are hungry in our community. The cuts that are being talked about now are a significant concern and will have a huge impact on our community. If the cuts come into place, it's going to mean there's more people needing food assistance that are going to be going to the pantries and the local organizations. We're struggling now to meet the need, let alone double that. We couldn't double our distribution And that wouldn't even probably offset the extent of cuts they're talking about.
So, even if you doubled your distribution, that wouldn't offset the cuts, you're saying?
Yes, it will overwhelm the community's effort to help feed people.
Are the cuts, remind me where we stand with food stamp cuts and what might be happening here. Are those cuts definitely going to happen, or where do we stand?
It's still up for grabs. They're still negotiating.
The farm bill, right?
The farm bill, yes. Mm-hmm. It is still under negotiation. So, you know, one thing I would ask is if anyone listening to this, to contact your legislators to say, please don't cut the federal programs that are helping to feed people in our community. It's resources that come in to help feed people right here in our community.
All right. Jeff from Blue Springs. Jeff, you're on Up to Date. Good morning. You there, Jeff? Might be having problems with our phones here. He wants to know about the obesity versus the hunger problem. What's the issue with, I don't know if that's clear enough or not.
Sure. It is clear.
Yeah.
It's kind of a paradox that we currently see people who are obese and overweight who are needing food assistance. And you kind of think, well, gosh, how can that be? And part of the reason is that many of the serious health issues are tied to food, mm-hmm. including diabetes and, you know, heart disease. I mean, many of those chronic health issues come back to food, and food is part of the solution. Good food is part of the solution.
Yeah.
But if a family is stretching dollars, many times unhealthy foods are the cheapest and most available. And so, you know, we do see the paradox of food insecurity actually can lead to overweight and obesity, which just doesn't seem right or logical, but it is.
Before we leave here, in the minute we have left, Karen, what can folks who are listening do to help? I'm sure there's different avenues here, but how can they connect? How can they help?
They can go to harvesters.org. Mm-hmm. The opportunities are to give us funds, to give us volunteer time, to donate food. So we need all the help we can get. The job is huge. The challenge is still there to help feed people in our community. So
I understand you're going to stay involved as you dash off into retirement here come July.
I am. I'm staying a little bit to help with the transition, but I always will be a donor to hunger relief and an advocate for hunger relief. So I will continue to do those things.
It's been a pleasure to have you. Thanks for your service and enjoy retirement.
Thank you, Steve.
You bet. That's Karen Heron. She's a retiring CEO of Harvesters. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Having trouble finding your center? Tomorrow on the program, yoga instructor Max Strom gives us tips on how to keep your mind balanced and calm. Also, we'll have the latest installment of 90 Mile View, and Brian McTavish returns with his weekend to-do list. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Caitlin Brennan, and Sangeeta Sastry. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.